But we see Jesus. Hebrews 2, verses 8 and 9 says, "But now we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus." Over the entrance to the Union Station in our nation's capital, there is written this inscription, "Fire, greatest of discoveries, enabling man to live in various climates, use many foods, and compel the forces of nature to do his work. Electricity, carrier of light and power, devourer of time and space, greatest servant of man, yet itself unknown." And then there follows this quotation from the Bible, "Thou hast put all things under his feet." Now, whosoever was responsible for that inscription must not have understood his text thoroughly, for it does not refer to man in the last analysis, but to Christ, the Son of Man. God indeed made the first Adam to have dominion over the earth, but he lost it. And the only way he will ever regain it will be through the last Adam, Jesus Christ. Adam was conquered by sin, but Christ conquered the devil. Adam was conquered by death, but Christ overcame death. Adam lost the tree of life, but Christ regained it. And blessed are they that do his commandments, that they shall have a right to it. Adam lost paradise, but Christ made possible a new paradise by the river of life. Adam lost his dominion. He has never yet regained it and never will. He is still trying to regain it with fire and electricity and all the wit and wisdom of unregenerate human nature, but never was it more evident than now that we shall not yet see all things put under man. I know that he flies the air, talks on the wind, has dug deeply into the treasures of knowledge, but instead of putting all things under his feet, he himself is buried under a landslide of his own devices. He is being eaten by the Frankenstein which he himself created. A leading university professor admitted some time ago, "The world we have created is too much for us. The wisdom of the race has failed before the problems which the race has raised. We were promised paradise, but we have pandemonium. The trail from protoplasm to perfection has run out in the wilderness." During the Century of Progress exhibition some years ago, someone wrote, "The theme was the achievements of science and their application through industry to the creation of a larger life for all mankind. The achievements of science were in abundance, but where, one was moved to ask, was the evidence of a larger life for mankind or even the promise of it? I know that we have come from tallow candles to television, but there is also more suffering, sin, suicide, insanity, crime, immorality, infidelity than the world has ever known. And so far as progress is concerned, one thinks of the family discussing an absent relative when someone remarked, 'He's getting on in the world.' And grandmother from her rocking chair in the corner asked, 'Which world?' We live in a fairyland of wonders devised by the head and fashioned by the hand, but while man has been going places with head and hand, his heart has been left behind. What a joke, then, to crown him with the laurels of victory when he staggers with moral drunkenness and spiritual delirium tremens. No, we see not yet all things put under man. Indeed, we may go a step further and say, we see not yet all things put under the Christian. I know that Christ overcame the world, and we stand in his victory. I know that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, and that this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. But all things are not yet actually under the Christian. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. In this world, we have tribulation. We share the common ups and downs of humanity, its sunshine and shadow, its weal and woe. Sometimes our bank account is down and our blood pressure is up. We're going to heaven, but we have just not yet arrived. We see not yet all things put under the Christian. Furthermore, we see not yet all things put under Christ. True, God has put all things under his feet, but we see not yet all things put under him. True, at Calvary and the open grave, he triumphed once for all, but we see not yet the actual and final consummation of his triumph. It is a mystery and not yet a full manifestation. The devil still goes round as a roaring lion, and worse still, as an angel of light. Sin still blights the race, and death still reaps its grim harvest. We live in perilous times, and the world lies in darkness. We see not yet all things put unto Christ. But there are two words for see in this passage. One means the impression our eyes receive, and the other means intently to behold. As we look around, the impression that our eyes receive is we see not yet all things put under man or put under the Christian or put under Christ, but we intently behold Jesus. And I know nothing better than to assist you in off looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Certainly there is much today that we see not yet put under him or put under us. There are those, if I should ask, have all your sorrows and your fears, your troubles and your tears been put under you? Would have to answer, no, brother. Would to God they were, but I see not yet all these put under me. There are old heartaches and new ones. There are those who lately have rained tears over an open grave. There are those whose castles have tumbled, whose dreams have failed, who are sad because there is such a distance between what they are and what they had hoped to be. But if you see not yet all your troubles put away, see Jesus. Fix your eyes on the man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, who said, "Let not your heart be troubled," and who has guaranteed us that if we only trust him at a time not too far distant, God shall wipe all tears from our eyes. I think when some saints die, the devil will say, "Well, I don't care if he does go to heaven. I've had a lot of fun worrying him down here." One day he thought he was saved, and the next day he didn't. I've worried him all his life. Brother, you can sit on the north side of the religion with your teeth rattling if you like, but I don't intend to give the devil that much pleasure. I believe in living in the sun, S-O-N, shine of the presence of the Lord by looking unto Jesus. There are others who are fully aware that sickness and death have not yet been finally put under him. Jesus was and is the great physician, but we still await the redemption of the body. And some have learned in more ways than one what it means to groan in this tabernacle. Salvation is free, but it's not yet full in our actual experience. If it were, some of you wouldn't be wearing glasses and trying to chew with false teeth. Maybe the doctor has shaken his head and told you that you can never be your old self again. Well, if Christ is our life, though we may never be our old selves again, soon we shall be like him. For when he shall appear, we shall be like him. So as Christians, we can feel better when we feel bad than we used to feel when we felt good. Then we're all conscious, I'm sure, that we see not yet sin and Satan actually put under us. The devil is on his way to the bottomless pit and the lake of fire, but he's not yet arrived. And how grieved we often are over the deceitfulness of our own hearts, for those who fain would serve him best are conscious most of wrong within. But if we are disappointed in ourselves, we have a high priest who was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin. John Bunyan relates, "Again one day as I was passing in the field, and that too with some dashes in my conscience, suddenly the sentence fell upon my soul, 'Thy righteousness is in heaven.' And methought withal I saw with the eyes of my soul Jesus Christ at God's right hand. I saw also, moreover, that it was not my good frame of heart that made my righteousness better, nor my bad frame of heart that made my righteousness worse, for my righteousness was Jesus Christ himself, the same yesterday, today, and forever." In other words, John Bunyan saw not yet all sin removed from John Bunyan, but he saw Jesus. But perhaps you have grown cynical, looking at other Christians, looking at some Bible teacher or conference or school or church. You have grown disillusioned and have said, "Alas, I see not yet all things put under him there." Well, perhaps it will teach you to see Jesus instead of men and to remember that there were the disciples glad when they saw the Lord. You went to a much advertised place to hear a much advertised preacher, but your idol's feet were of clay and very poor clay at that, and now you are sick at heart. I've never seen yet a church or a school where I thought all things had been put under Christ, but I can see Jesus. When the disciples failed to cast out the demon from the boy at the foot of the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus said, "Bring him to me." We hear a lot about the failures of the church today, and too often has it been true of churches before a demonized world that they could not. But back of the church stands Christ, and he never fails. His touch still has its ancient power. I know that we live in the Laodicean age of a lukewarm church, but even that chapter does not end there, but with Christ himself knocking at the door of human hearts. Let us see Jesus. We see not yet all things put under him in the church, but we see him. I know that there is envy and strife and discord aplenty, that fundamentalism needs a trip to the mourner's bench more than anything else. I sympathize with the little girl who prayed, "Lord, make all the bad people good and make all the good people nice." Yes, there's a grace without graces. There are graces without grace, but above all the failures of Christians and churches, we see Jesus. Finally, as we look out on a wretched, miserable world with the newspaper's flaming scream lines and our young generation looking down a gun barrel for its future, truly we see not yet all things put under him. But there is a crumb of comfort even in all this. In the breakdown of this Punch and Judy civilization, some are beginning to discover that the faith of our fathers is not the back number proposition some sophomore smart alecks thought it was. And some who regard prophetic teachers as crepe hangers with bats in our belfries may learn that we're not the ones who missed the bus. Of course, we do not want to pat ourselves on the back with an "I told you so" attitude in these days. I'm reminded of a half-wit in a certain town who did not have much sense, but he had enough to get saved, which is more than a lot of people are using these days. The townspeople put up with his witnessing because they regarded him as a harmless nitwit. But an earthquake struck the town, split it open, tumbling buildings, and it brought men to their knees in prayer for the first time in their lives. That morning, this converted half-wit came downtown, and it was his big morning. Every time he found one of these merchants on his knees, he would strike him on the back and shout, "Now who's right?" Thank God my ticket's bought and baggage checked. Come on, Jesus, I'm ready to go. It's a great thing to have your ticket bought and your baggage checked today. Yes, we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus. One thing cheers my heart amid the tears and the fears, the war of words and the strife of tongues today, the darkness and despair of a crumbling world. Thank God I'm on the winning side. In Acts, we read that King Herod made a big speech one day, and the people said, "It is the voice of a God and not of a man." Then we read, "And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost." Then notice the contrast of the next verse. "But the word of God grew and prevailed." It has always been like that. You are for the word, or you are for the worms. Not only worms that get the body, but the worm that dieth not where the fire is not quenched. More than one Herod has risen through the ages to shake his fist at God, but the worms got them all. What if Nero did wear a crown worth $500,000, go fishing with golden fish hooks, never wear the same clothes twice? The worms got him just the same. But the word goes on and prevails. An earlier Herod tried to kill Jesus, but later God said to Joseph in Egypt, "You can take the child back now, for they are dead which sought the young child's life." They always die when they get in the way of God's business. From the way some Christians talk, you'd think this war took God by surprise, but never worry. God is still on the throne. Let the kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel against God and his Christ. But he that sits in the heavens shall laugh, and the Lord shall have them in derision. It may look like the devil has it going his way, but when the smoke has cleared, you will discover that God is putting his program through according to schedule. Some time ago, I left Baltimore on a Sunday night to make a speaking appointment in Illinois by Monday night. I was due to arrive there just 30 minutes before speaking time, and with railroad schedules like they are now, it looked hopeless. But I felt that I was going to do it. Next morning, I discovered that a prominent government official was sitting across the aisle from me in the Pullman. He had to speak that night in Chicago, and I understand that orders were given the engineer that the train must go through on time. But I got a lot of fun out of that situation. I said to myself afterwards, that big official thought the train was making time because he had to speak in Chicago, but the Lord was really overruling it all so that this preacher could preach on that same night at that time. Oh, brother, it sometimes appears that this world is running the show, but back of all the plans of men, God is making all things work together for good for his own. God had the first word, and he'll have the last. And though we see not yet all things put under him, we see Jesus, who said, "Fear not, I am the first and the last." So as you go out into this puzzled and distracted world, see Jesus. Above your sorrows and your tears, see Jesus. Above your aches and pains, see Jesus. Above the failures in yourself and others, see Jesus. Above the world's sin and shame, see Jesus. Let not the things you see not yet keep you from seeing Jesus. Let not self nor Satan, saint nor sinner, divert your eye from him. Change and decay in all around you see, but he abideth faithful. He remaineth the same yesterday, the historic Christ, the same today, the indwelling Christ, the same tomorrow, the coming Christ. He is behind us, within us, ahead of us. We don't know what's ahead, but we know who's ahead. He was born on time, died on time, rose on time, is coming on time. He may seem slow, but he's never late. He is the first and the last, so there's nothing to fear. He was here before there was ever anything to fear, and he'll be here after all we fear has passed away. Did you ever sit in a train in a railroad station, looking out a window, and feel that it was moving when actually it was another train that was moving and yours was still standing? Well, this world is passing. It's just a passing show. The world passeth away in the lust thereof. The fashion of this world passeth away, and sometimes we're carried along by the urge and the surge of it. We need to look out the other window and fix our eyes upon Jesus, looking full into his wonderful face. Then indeed the things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. We see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus.